don't run too far behind. So folks who are on the finance panel, if you'll come up to the front, please. Okay, here it is.
Whatever order you want to be.
Yeah, innovations and finance. Okay.
Hi, hey, is that Michael?
Well, you will just talk in order.
Hey, congratulations.
Is this our
post?
Yeah.
So we're going to continue with our panel conversations, and our next panel is Innovations in Financing Climate Action. With the facilitator is Wendy Northcross, CEO of the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce. So take it away,
Thank
Wendy.
You, Fran. So I have the lucky alliterative panel of Matt, Mary, and Maggie. You can read about them in your materials. I also just wanted to make emphasize a point that Steve Tupper made earlier this morning about land use controls. And people have often asked me, why does Cape Cod have so many small towns? And I used to say, I don't know. I guess it's as far as a pilgrim could walk in a day. And then they plunked a town border down. Well, don't you know, in doing research for the preparation of the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the pilgrims, that's exactly what happened. They said you have to be able to walk within a day, you have to be able to get to the meeting house. And so another meeting house would be built if it was too far to walk. And so I think that's kind of instructive. And I will tell you another frequently asked question of me at the Cape Cod Chamber is, where can I live in Barnstable Village? I want to live in Barnstable Village. And it's like, whoa. So if you have any houses for sale in Barnstable Village, let me know. The next thing I'm going to do very quickly, and we're going to try to compress and get back on schedule here, but I am going to give Maggie Downey a couple of seconds for a rebuttal for something that was suggested this morning about the renewable energy portfolio. So, Maggie, would it just...
Sure, okay. thanks, Wendy. And, of course, I left my notes where I was sitting, so I'm going to be kind of flying here a little bit. So I just wanted to actually say thank you to Carol for giving the Cape Light Compact a shout-out, but to actually remind everybody that we do actually have a green product, which is greener than Lowell's, this is what I really love, greener than Lowell's 59, because we're 65% local renewable energy, and because our price changes, we're actually cheaper. Right now, we're a tenth of a cent higher, but we were significantly lower in the summer. So you have a green power product option. You can even green it up even further if you should so desire. The difference between what Lowell has done and what the compact, remember the compact is simply 21 towns negotiating a contract, is 21 boards of selectmen have to agree that they want what they want to offer constituents. And what they agreed is, because of the makeup of our community and because of the pressure, we've been doing this a long time, almost 20 years now, and we've been benchmarked compared to utility, they wanted to have a product that was greener than the utility, but cheaper, and then allow customers to choose to even pursue being greener. So, you know, a challenge for all of us here today is to really encourage people to walk the talk, and every one of us here should be signed up for either 50% green, local green, or 100% local green, and start making a difference and sending a message to our selectmen and councilors that it's okay for everybody to pay more, or no, we want to just have options. So, but thanks, Wendy.
So we're actually going to start with Matt Mancuso from the Connecticut Green Bank, and we thought that it would be just a good way to set the conversation for this panel by having him explain the Green Bank, how it operates, and how we might copy it, or whatever. We'll steal from the best.
Sure. How's it going, everybody?
Good.
I was originally going to regale you with how little sleep my two-year-old gave me, but instead I actually want to open up by saying what an honor it is to follow Senator Markey, who was here. He actually gave us as an organization at Connecticut Green Bank the opportunity to follow his lead with Waxman Markey in 2009. The National Climate Bank that he just mentioned as a 2019 proposal, its prototype was back in Waxman Markey. When that bill died in the Senate, it went to the laboratory of the states, and Connecticut was the first one, and in 2011 established Connecticut Green Bank by state statute. Since then, Massachusetts has pretty much done everything else first before Connecticut, but we don't need to get into that.
And the Pilgrims landed first in Provincetown, don't
they? Right. All right.
You go. I'm
I won't get into the Patriots and how you took them. Okay. How should we advance? Slide?
So yep, I am. I'm slide.
Thank you. Next slide, please. We envision a world, you know, empowered by the renewable energy community. We finance clean energy infrastructure by state statute. So, thanks. I'm not even going to read the slides. They could read off the screen. But we do renewable energy, energy efficiency, and alternative fuel vehicles and infrastructure. Is our current scope of practice. We've mobilized nearly $1.7 billion of investment, billion with a B, into Connecticut's green energy economy. The secret sauce tends to be leveraging limited amounts of public ratepayer capital. We get a tenth of a penny per kilowatt hour on electric residential commercial bills across the state. And that totals to about $26 million a year that we have to work with. So we tend to do a lot of project finance deals where that money is parked and used as part of a capital structure that allows other investors from outside to come in. That helps Connecticut scale up its ability to invest in clean renewable energy and energy efficiency projects and meet its own aggressive public policies, very similar to Massachusetts, without having to fully use public monies to do that. Reduce the energy burden on over, this is my only quick overview slide, reduce the energy burden on over 45,000 families and businesses. We administer the state's rooftop residential incentive program, and we saw eventually that it wasn't being distributed equitably. We've got a lens for the, you know, just transition of a clean energy economy, and so we've since attracted in specialty companies serving the low to moderate income segment, gotten up to parity in terms of area median income bands as far as who's demanding solar, who's receiving it to lower their own energy bills. For communities of color, that's actually beyond parity right now. So Connecticut, I think, is the only state in the nation to have those sorts of statistics when it comes to equitable distribution of residential rooftop solar. So we like to promote that. It's been about 360 megawatts of renewable energy we put out, all distributed energy projects, 6.5 million tons of CO2 reduced, and calculated public health costs about $200 million that have been reduced. And if you ever want to make the case to a legislature, of course, put it in terms of tax revenues and jobs created, too. Next slide, please. So I could have gone off the cuff about any number of subjects, any number of existing programs that we have. We serve residential, commercial markets, institutional markets. But we thought that what might be most of interest to you, advance one more slide. Okay, go back. that's a tricky slider. We thought might be of most interest to you is what the Green Bank is about to work on. What we're really excited about right now is the release of climate war bonds. It's been said several times today that attacking climate change is going to require a mobilization economically on par with World War II. So what did they do back then? They had victory bonds that they democratized access to for everybody to chip in. So we're envisioning providing a rate of return on these bonds, just like you know, grandma and grandpa might have bought you a bond for when you go off to college. You can cash in 20, 30 years' time, however long it is. It'll accrue interest. It's an interest-bearing vehicle, except it goes to clean energy purposes. So we're really excited about this. Normally, it's institutional investors who buy our products, our asset-backed issuances that pertain to clean energy. But this will be the lowest offered nationally in this sort of asset class. $1,000 still seems kind of high for that sort of thing. It's not for absolutely everybody who might be able to buy in that denomination. But for what this is, this sort of security, it's actually much lower than you would otherwise encounter in the market. We envision this being offered, this mini bond, on a citizens engagement platform that allows people to invest in projects in their communities. Don't think about taking the website name, greenbonds.us. We already bought the domain. Marketing will be around the concept of this idea of green bonding us all together, the ecosystem, air, water, biosphere. We're all connected by it, right? So we're bonded by our future, our behaviors, and that connection is what we're seeking to establish in the mind of the consumer. There are certain efficiencies that you could get with selling straight to institutional investors. We tend to get that question. Why would you break out mini bonds when it can be more economically efficient to do it otherwise and sell to a U.S. bank or a Bank of America? The answer to that is to create buy-in among citizenry. You get more stakeholders out there, and you get more people who are actively invested in their own clean energy future. So we saw real value to that. Next slide, please. So in Connecticut, the way that we're doing this first transaction, and I won't go into depth on the complexity of this policy, but I said before we administer the state incentive for RESI rooftop solar PV. In return for that, by state statute, we get the renewable energy credits, the RECs. So in 2015, the state gave us a policy to help fund that incentive because it was a big cash draw on us as solar was ramping up back then. So that mandates the purchase by utilities of these REC streams to satisfy the renewable portfolio standard, making residential rooftop solar part of the Class 1 RPS in Connecticut. We thought ahead, and we built in the ability to assign those REC streams to others, which allows us to securitize the forward value of those 15-year purchase agreements with the utilities, and then sell those off to the market, and then we would get the ability to fund those incentives up front. That came in really handy when the state a few years ago decided to say half of your budget is ours for the next 2 years, and so we decided to click go on that transaction a little bit faster than usual. So the way this mini bond transaction is working is this is the third annual tranche or batch of renewable energy credits that we're going to be batching out to the utilities. We're making this particular one accessible to bond buyers and retail. And then we're thinking of adding a cap on the purchase amount, so the overall ultra-high net worth buyers, they don't get big blocks of these taking away from retail purchasers. What you're seeing on the screen right there, if a bond is green, has to be substantiated. So we got a climate impact score on the overall securitization of solar home renewable energy credits, or SHRECs, and went that route because it's a quantifiable approach, shows the actual impact. In the future, we might use some other methods to get to the same place. Next slide, please. This essentially saying something very similar, going through substantiation of the green attributes of that asset. And we were originally thinking of selling to the asset-backed securities market. We saw it as being cheaper to go for the municipal debt market, so we're selling there instead. And at the suggestion of our state treasurer, we're putting together what's called a seller's group, which involves a number of brokers who we could work through who know better how to reach into diversified communities of buyers so that we can get a good diversified pool of them. Next slide. And I think the rest is ending slides. Thank you so much.
Next, I'm going to have Maggie Downey give us an update on what she's up to at the Cape Lake Compact and CVAC and whatever else you want to talk about.
Awesome. So I'm going to, if you go to my slides, first slide, I am actually going to talk about something that is near and dear to, should be all of us, because you pay for these programs every month. I'm going to talk about our energy efficiency programs. And using our energy efficiency programs and basically all of our electric bills as a way to address climate change, to finance a climate change response, and particularly focusing on our low-income and moderate-income populations. So again, the test, I want you to think about this, because we don't have approval for this. It has to go to the Department of Public Utilities, and I think we're actually going to need some technical amendment to legislation to really make sure if this is something that we're going to do, the Department of Public Utilities can't say no. So that's just keep thinking about this. It's a question. The Compact Board, all 21 towns, supported this. But for you in the audience, it's actually, are you willing to pay a portion of our energy efficiency funds to specifically address the issue of social equity and environmental justice when it comes to responding to climate change? And why I'm talking about this is because we really surprised and very happy in August of last year when the Massachusetts legislature updated the Green Communities Act, which creates the funding for our energy efficiency programs on the Cape and Vineyard. And they updated the Green Communities Act for the first time in 10 years to include three really exciting elements. One, something known as strategic electrification. And what does that mean? That is trying to get our heating sector, because other than transportation, buildings is your number two for creating greenhouse gases, to take our building sectors and move them off of heating and cooling from fossil fuels. So we're talking, for us, we're focusing on oil, propane, and old electric resistance heat, and moving them to newer, cleaner technologies, which are cold climate heat pumps, ground source heat pumps, and pairing those with the next thing that they added was the ability to use energy efficiency funds for storage being batteries. And we're talking, for this, my presentation today, we're talking small-scale residential batteries. And the next one, this is the one that keeps me up at night because it's really vague, which I thought would work in our favor but actually can work against us, is they also said we can use our funds for programs that result in customers switching to renewable energy sources. So to me, it was like, great, we can use some of these funds for solar, for small-scale projects. Doesn't really say that, so we're kind of pushing the envelope on that, but that's exactly what we're going to propose. So the Cape Lake Compact is proposing something known as CVEO, the Cape and Vineyard Electrification Offering, which is addressing the three new elements of the 2018 Green Communities Amendments: strategic electrification, which are cold climate heat pumps or ground source heat pumps, battery storage, so residential size scale storage, and then pairing that with PV. So what does that get you? And it will get you to almost a net zero home that's an existing structure, because you're going to be electrifying your heating and cooling and all of your usage in the house, hopefully getting a PV system size that can meet that load or be very close to it, and then give you storage, which for us is the climate resiliency piece. Because basically, as you all know, if you have solar, when the grid goes down, you have a lot of expensive glass on your roof, because they don't work when the grid goes down unless you pair that with storage. So that's the trifecta, the three pieces of the legislation. I think the legislature did us a great service, and the compact is trying to put it into action through CVO. Next slide. So real quickly, this is a snapshot and why we decided it was really important to focus on low and moderate income customers, because the Cape has, and the Vineyard, have a really high penetration of solar installations. We've had successful Energize the Outer Cape, we're trying to mirror that throughout the Cape and Vineyard. We have the solar loan program that someone else is going to talk about that's been very successful. But when you look at that pie graph, if just pay attention to the blue sector, there are very few low and moderate income customers who are able to install solar on their rooftops. And very few have taken advantage of the solar loan program. And the issue here, the equity and the social justice issue is there is no, you know, we pay for everything. You never think that, you know, the batteries being proposed by the utilities or the solar on your rooftop, the X, ratepayers, us, we pay for all of this in our electric bills. And because we've had a lot of solar installations on the residential side, they've been for very high income and above moderate income customers. And the cost of those SRECs, which have made them transformed the market, it's, I think it's an it was an unintended consequence of being so successful, is because everybody pays for those RECs or SRECs or the smart tariff in another portion of your electric bill, we are disproportionately shackling the low and moderate income with higher bills, paying for those that really can afford to move off and install solar on their roof. We're burying that in another section of the bill. So it's a real, it came really clear to the Cape Light Compact Governing Board that this is something that we should be addressing. And we think we have the tools through our energy efficiency program to do so. Next slide. So what is it that we're doing? And just to background, why can't low and moderate income customers take advantage of it? Without a doubt, it is the upfront cost, even on the or taking on additional debt for a loan. It isn't that they couldn't, it's just they their energy burden is disproportionately high, and they just don't have those out-of-pocket funds. They also frequently don't have the ability to take advantage of any of the tax credits due to their own income brackets. I do have one good news on the first bullet. On the smart tariff, which was rolled out this year, it says zero there. We've got a whopping improvement. We now have one low-income customer in the state of Massachusetts who is able to participate in smart. And it's great that there's one, but we're hoping to move that needle significantly, be trying to fund it a different way. And again, they're not participating because of the high upfront cost and the inability to get a loan because of their own personal financial system. Battery storage. We see the same thing happening. The board discussed this. Battery storage in Massachusetts is going to be a bring-your-own-device. Well, guess, and you'll get paid if you participate in a demand response program, bringing down, making that the payback period under 7 years, maybe, I think I have my number right, but a shorter time frame. So who's going to move in the battery field? Those that have the economic wherewithal, that have the solar, or can install solar and battery storage. Again, leaving behind a target population that we hope through CVEO we can start to engage. And then the last is electrification. Heat pumps are a technology. They've been around for a long time. They don't work in every house, but they do work well in a lot of the housing stock on Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard. But again, the upfront cost of coming up with, you know, $30,000 for a PV system, $10,000 for a battery, and oh yeah, you have to change out your heating system in order to get to be net zero. For somebody who is the living, working people on the Cape, it's just not attainable. Next slide. So what do we propose? So the concentric circle, what we're proposing is to install a PV system, pair it with cold climate heat pumps or a ground source heat pump, and a battery for demand response. And we are targeting 250, that's down significantly from the initial because of budget impacts, non-natural gas heated homes, and that's a strategy. So we're talking about the Outer Cape, all of the Outer Cape, the Vineyard, and then pockets throughout the rest of the Cape that heat on the Cape and Vineyard that have oil and propane. And in giving them 100% incentives and higher incentives that will address the upfront cost of participating, and specifically for low-income customers. When I say low-income, it would be 60% or less of the state median income. You would receive a PV system for your house, a cold climate heat pump, which is your heating system, which, by the way, which is what we do now through our energy efficiency programs. We do fund 100% heating systems for low income. So that's nothing new. It's just changing to strategic to electrifying that heating system. And then, again, giving 100% incentive for the battery storage. So we would find homes. We're going to focus originally on 150 deed-restricted properties on the Cape and Vineyard and install those three technologies. We've been working for many years with Habitat. I don't know if they're still here, if they had a lead for their event. pairing with them. So they already have, some homes already have two of the technologies. They have the solar and they have the heat pumps. We'll just have to add the batteries. But again, what we would do for new customers, take the smart payment that you would normally get, that many if you did this on your own, and then reinvest that back into the energy efficiency program. We're looking, we just did an RFI, a request for information, to talk to developers about third-party installation, because as a public entity, we can't take advantage of the tax credits or the accelerated depreciation. So we're looking for entities, whether it's a solar developer or bank, wink, wink, if there's a that has the an appetite to invest funds and then get paid back through the other, you know, the traditional avenues, tax credits, accelerated depreciation, and smart payments, to bring down the cost to ratepayers so that we can take this from 150 and spread it out. Because, and it's not going to be the only thing that works. DOER, I think, if their staff is still here, hopefully, they're working on ways. We acknowledge, I mean, this is a, it's kind of like the elephant in the room. We realize that we have not, we've underserved our low and moderate income customers. They need to be part at the table and participating in these technologies. They need to be able to be resilient in an outage and be able to stay in their own homes. So we think we have a great, a good offer. But if you want to go to the last slide, it's it just shows the incentives. This is not just for low and moderate. The higher incentives are for below 60. We have a $5,000 down payment if you're in the 61 to 80, and then anyone else can participate through the smart tariffs. But again, we're proposing to utilize our ratepayer-funded energy efficiency programs to create higher incentives for our low-income properties so that they can participate in these programs and technologies and become resilient and get their homes down to net zero, because we are really struggling with to get with other vehicles and means to get them there. So again, need your help. We would like your support in this proposal. We're going to need some legislative changes, and then at the Department of Public Utilities, it never hurts to write a letter or support us and let you know that this is something that our community is willing to pay for through our electric bills. So that's it on our innovative financing for low and moderate customers for now.
Wow.
So two great presentations so far. So now we're going to hear from our banking community, our Cape-based banks. Matt and Mary, anybody want to go first, or should we just go right in line?
No,
no. Matt from Cape Cod 5-cent Savings Bank, as Dorothy taught me to say.
Thank you, Wendy. And Maggie, very tough act to follow here. But Matt Burke from Cape Cod 5, very excited to be here and sponsor this great event once again. I will hope you'll appreciate, as I see how excited everyone else gets about this topic, how excited I got when I put together my very long slide deck, probably too long. So I'm going to go through this quick and point out a few things. You'll also notice four slides at the end that I actually won't cover, because I got so excited I kind of jumped into more of like the research and trends and pathways and things like that. So I know you'll all forgive me for that. So if we could flip to the first slide. Thank you, Janet. So just an illustration here, the way that we look at our mission at the bank, which is enriching lives, our four strategic goals, you'll see, and then our five ways of engagement. And when you look at the five ways of engagement, and Janet, if we can flip to the next slide, actually, it's easy to focus on philanthropy, particularly when we talk about, community needs and things like that. We feel like we can have amplify that many times over through our other five ways, and I'm just going to flip through some of the things that we're doing across each of those ways as we go through the next few slides here. Janet, if you could flip, thank you. So community banking, we've recently launched a solar loan program where you can finance up to $50,000 in solar PV systems for both primary and second homeowners. MassSave, we've been involved in the heat loan program through MassSave since inception in 2001. As you can see, have done quite a bit of volume through there and have helped many folks in our region with energy efficient upgrades to their homes. And then also programs through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, basically be able to underwrite those mortgages to take into consideration the positive financial impact of energy efficient upgrades in their homes. Janet, thank you. Responsible business practices. So one of the the things that we're doing here, as many of you have seen, is our new campus that we're building in Hyannis. We've committed to environmental stewardship in every way in terms of how we're building this building. LEED Gold certified. We're hopefully about a month away from wrapping up this project and getting our certification. It was previous developed sites which we acquired to build this property, so to not increase the sprawl and things like that. Solar panels, we put roof mounted solar, 15,000 square feet of PV panels on the building, producing about 300,000 watts of electricity annually. Parking structure to again reduce the asphalt covering our areas, parking. Things like that. View glass, so this is a new, relatively new development, which is basically self-tinting glass. So each piece of glass has an IP address and adjusts based on the position of the sun and different things like that. So it does have a payback in terms of energy efficiency and upfront cost, but does return over time. And then other things in terms of interior furnishings, having on-site amenities to reduce travel needs, things like that, and native plants. Janet? And then here, just a couple of other things. Socially responsible investing. We've invested in a number of solar arrays at this point, about $9 million in investments over the few years here. Honestly, we wish that there were more opportunities to be able to invest in this. This is the federal investment tax credit program that has been a good opportunity for us to invest both throughout the state. We've had opportunities locally with Barnstable Housing Authority as the off-taker, so to be able to do something that is good for the environment and also benefit residents with reduced energy costs. And some of the other things are investment portfolio strategies to be able to target socially responsible investing and actually target those investments locally to be able to drive different areas of need. And then paperless, which we all try to be more paperless, but implementing paperless processes. Janet? Great. Here, one of our biggest ways that we feel like we drive, positive change in our region are, our 500-plus employees and what they're able to do, participating on nonprofit boards and volunteering for different, projects and initiatives, things like that. So as you can see, over 3,000 volunteer hours in 2018 and on track to do that once again this year. And you can see the number of organizations with respect to environmental stewardship. Advancement of financial know-how. This is an area that we're expanding, particularly with our new facility, as well as digitally be able to deliver financial education all the way from school-aged up until elderly across all areas. This is a big opportunity when we talk about education and awareness for across all demographics for different utilizations of renewable energy and ways that we can all be more green. You see we have dedicated space in our new headquarters. And then philanthropy, hundreds of organizations that we give to, both through the bank and in our charitable foundation every year to support environmental stewardship. And this is where I got very excited and actually started digging into the research and laying out some things here. So it's in the slide deck. It's really, really interesting. This is, very good research out there, which I know a lot of you have already seen. A lot of this comes from the Brattle Group, based out of Boston, focused on finance and environmental advancements. And then just a plug for Columbia Energy Exchange podcast, which actually has some really good, stuff with respect to. One of the things was the mission, which I'm sure a number of you have seen, which is Mission Possible, which is to basically be carbon neutral by 2050, 2060. Really good resource there. But that's all I had. Thank you.
These are great slides. And just so everyone knows, all the slides from today will all be on the Climate Change Collaborative's website as soon as they get uploaded there. So you'll be able to access this amazing data that Matt has put together.
So Mary Linehan from the Cooperative Bank of Cape Cod, I'm going to ask you what's going on at the Coop, but also we had been having some offline conversations about some of the realtor community have said to me that it's not really easy to sell a house with existing PV panels on the roof, that it's a, sort of a danger or beware. Was the roof, you know, stable enough before PV was put on? You know, how do the banks approach some of these things or not approach them? And how can the banks help homeowners that are either trying to sell or buy? Even if you're not financing, you're getting those mortgage requests. I know that you're not in residential lending, but still, it's like, yeah. Same scenario, I think, with the business community, too, right. If there's PV. So I'm just going to turn it over to you, and we are going to try to wrap up by 1:30.
Okay.
If we do sooner, that's great, too.
All right. Mary Lenihan from the Cooperative Bank of Cape Cod, the little sister to our big brother, Cape Cod 5. We are rapidly approaching $1 billion, and we also going to be around about 100 years in 2021. Our involvement in renewable energy thus far has been primarily in the commercial end. We've financed several projects starting back in 2010, and those are primarily have been for existing customers who want to improve the efficiency of their own buildings, and they've been primarily for solar arrays. We have seen an uptick on those sorts of requests and also expanding to developers who want to expand that by leasing space on other buildings and expanding the footprint of solar. So that's an exciting opportunity that we want to continue to pursue. As far as the bank is concerned, we have our own little solar array that we put in place in 2013. And since that time, it's produced, you know, significant energy as well as savings and tax benefits. And we are in the planning stages of expanding that through some parking lot,
covered
parking. Yeah. So those are initiatives we want to continue. As far as the homeowners concerned, I mean, I think that challenge continues to be ongoing a lot because of information. And some of it good, some of it bad, as the technology changes and more people are getting access to these things, they're trying to sort through who to trust, what's going on, and things like that. But from a pure, you know, financing standpoint, it boils down to dollars and cents. I mean, we talked about different populations not being able to afford some of these things and why, and what are the risks of putting them on. At the end of the day, there's options, right? Historically, some of these have been liens on the properties that have to get paid for. You have the PACE programs, which become a super lien. So that's another avenue that people have to deal with. But now there's other programs out there that don't involve leaning the home at all through the Department of Energy of Massachusetts. So there's all different avenues there. I think the opportunity for a local bank like us going forward is in education. When you think about our footprint, we're 9 branches, you're probably at least triple that, and you go along to the other banks in the region, and I dare say 100%, if not 99% of people have bank accounts or have access to online banking. How can we be a platform to expand the education about renewable energy and what it means and how it can benefit? And working with our partners that have been in this room, it's been a very exciting day for me. I've learned a ton in the last 7 days alone, let alone in this room today. So how can we leverage that and take it to the consumer, who clearly makes up 2/3 of our economy? And that's where it boils down to, you know, where the feet hit the ground. There's so much going on, but not everybody really understands it. So how do we get that word out there and link people, be a conduit to link them to the financing opportunities or to the other programs that are doing such great work in our community and that so many people may or may not know about or at least have limited information? So as technology evolves, as our climate, you know, accelerates in the issues that we're facing, as so many have said today, it's time. And I think communication, I think Dr. Carter talked a lot about communication. How we communicate is really important. You know, let's stick to what's important and get the message out there and link people to the right resources. So, yeah.
Thanks, Mary. So does anyone have any parting shots? No? Maggie? Nothing?
Parting shots?
Yeah.
Sure, why not? Not a shot. I guess everything that I've heard today, and I just want to reiterate, you know, there is no silver bullet to solving and to addressing the challenges that we face. And I think that there's a role for everyone, you know, even those that maybe we might think, oh, that's a crockpot idea, or why aren't they doing more? I mean, I think that's a key takeaway for all of us is that the solutions lie with us. We're going to have to pay for those solutions. And I think that we need to just embrace that, acknowledge it, and just get on and do it because we have everything that we need right here on the Cape and Vineyard.
Figure it out.
I'll answer the question you asked me right to begin with. Why doesn't Massachusetts have a green bank? I've seen multiple years that sort of thing get proposed. Not every state does. Maybe a dozen of them are out there. There's existing authorities that exist within other agencies, be it a state treasurer's office or a Department of Energy. If they're dispersed, then they might already be there. You saw a substantial amount of private activity going on right here in the clean energy space. A part of what we do as a creature of state statute is to fill market gaps that aren't being addressed and to teach the lenders to fish if they're not doing it already. So if they're doing it already and they're going gangbusters from what it sounds like and they're doing great work in their communities, then do you need that sort of public entity to fill a market gap? I'm not the one who's going to provide that answer, but those were my thoughts in response to what you were thinking before.
Anybody else? You're all good? Well, thank you, Matt Burke, the newly minted co-president at Cape Cod 5, Mary Linehan, first vice president at Cooperative Bank of Cape Cod, and Matt McCunas from the Green Bank in Connecticut, and Maggie Downey from Cape Lake Compact. And thank you for sharing all your information today. Thanks.
Thank you, Wendy, and everybody there. We have about a couple of minutes while this panel clears and the next panel comes up, so you can stretch your legs. We're caught back up again, so